Welcome, members and guests, to the January 15th program of the City Club of Eugene. Welcome to our TV audiences on community television and the Oregon Wind Network. I'm Marty Wilde, the City Club president. Our sponsors today are Evans, Elder & Brown Commercial Real Estate, Helios Resource Network, Info Internet Solutions, and a special thank you to KLCC for airing the programs on Monday night, and KPFF Consulting Engineers for our office space. Thank you also to the Wayne Morse Center and the University of Oregon for providing us space for this special program. We thank you for listening. These programs are free for our listening audience, but there are costs involved. Your contribution is completely tax deductible and will help keep our organization healthy. And as I found out, if you make a matching contribution to the Oregon Cultural Trust, your contribution is not only tax deductible, but actually can give you a tax credit. Today's presenter is Kate Brown, the Oregon Secretary of State, who will discuss electoral reform in Oregon. Unlike many other states, Oregon does not have a lieutenant governor, instead making the second most powerful executive officer actually work for a living. The Secretary of State has responsibility for businesses, archives, auditing, and relevant to our topic today, elections. Please welcome Oregon Secretary of State, Kate Brown.
Thank you, Marty. Delighted to be here with the Eugene City Club this afternoon. And Marty, I don't know if I can use the Senator Wyden joke on you, but you've certainly got a voice made for radio. So I think Senator Wyden says he has a face made for radio. So delighted to be here with you this afternoon. My apologies for confusions regarding the topic. I think my office focused on what you wanted, and we focused on what you wanted to do. So I'm going to be speaking this afternoon about elections reform, and actually I'm really excited to do that because I don't often get to do it in front of such a distinguished audience. So I'm also very happy. I understand we have plenty of time for questions, and I'm more than happy to answer any of your questions about some of the work we're doing in the corporation division to make it easier for small businesses in Oregon. And we just had the rollout of our benefit company legislation earlier this month. So lots of things happening in my other divisions as well. I'd like to start out. During my first term as your Secretary of State, I had the incredible opportunity to travel to India as part of the Rodel Fellows Young Leaders Program. It was a couple of years ago, and I've since passed the age mark for being a young leader with the Rodel Fellows Program. But I did get to go to India. Very amazing experience for me there. But it was also a wake-up call. And what happened on my trip is that we heard stories, learned of the real role of the Indian federal government and the extent that it goes to make sure that its citizens can vote, even remote rural villagers, that they can have an opportunity to participate in their franchise. So for me, it was really a wake-up call. And that is, as your Secretary of State and your Chief Elections Officer, we should be doing everything possible to educate, engage, and empower all eligible Oregonians. So let me start with engage. In my mind, it's critical that we not only engage Oregonians in the voting process, but that Oregonians also have a good understanding of how government works. And some like to argue that it's students lacking in civic knowledge. I would argue it's all of us. And I just want to share a number from Adam Davis. He's a pollster in Portland. And they have been doing polling around civic opportunity over the last number of years. But one of his numbers showed 44% of Oregonians, almost half, do not know that Oregon has two U.S. senators. And 50% of Oregonians cannot name the three branches of the U.S. government. So I know that everyone in this room finds those statistics rather startling. But my challenge, I think, our challenge is, if we want to move forward as a state and tackle many of the issues facing Oregon, we need to have more Oregonians know the basics and be more engaged in the process. And frankly, we need more of our eligible Oregonians voting. So in my role as your Chief Elections Officer, we have taken a couple of steps in this direction. I'll mention a couple of them. First of all, we developed a civics toolkit. The goal was to have teachers be able to pull the toolkit off the shelf and use it in their classroom so they could educate their students. It's actually a really wonderful tool for community organizers as well. The kit is available in both English and in Spanish. And for those of you who are familiar, Justice Day O'Connor has an iCivics tool that's available on the internet as well. This is like that, probably not as sophisticated, but it's the Oregon-centric version of the iCivics toolkit. So that's available for your use for your community organizations. Second thing we did, and we partnered a couple of years ago with a national group called Rock the Vote to work on voter registration on National Voter Registration Day, which is a particular day in September. It's actually a new holiday, not an official holiday. You don't get the day off. But the focus for us has been on high school voter registration. And Josh is here in the room. He and I worked with the 300 Oregon high schools to get a number of them to participate in the National Voter Registration Day 2 years ago. The good news is, in Oregon, we had over 175 high schools participate. On that day alone, we traveled to four high schools. One of them was Sheldon High School. And during that week, we registered 5,000 students. So that was a heck of an effort to get more students engaged in voting. Moving forward, what I see are the challenges around civic education are I don't know if there's any school teachers in the room, but our teachers are being challenged with the Common Core standards and on top of No Child Left Behind. And so I, from my perspective, think it's fairly unlikely that we're going to get civics back into the classroom soon. So I have another idea, and I don't know if you all have been exposed to the Classroom Law Project, either We the People Project or their Project Citizen. Really wonderful, We the People Constitution Debate. Project Citizen enables a middle schooler or a high school student to get involved in a public policy project and come up with a solution and then actually work on that solution, whether it's testify in front of city council or draft legislation that you get to appear in front of the Oregon legislature for. So I did learn that in Bosnia, every student gets to participate in Project Citizen. So I figure if they did it in Bosnia, we can figure it out in Oregon. And I would argue that we should essentially privatize this, fund Classroom Law Project, make sure that every student in Oregon has access to either We the People competition or the Project Citizen. So that's my proposal on what we can do to educate all of our young people. And honestly, if we did this, I'm confident it would substantially increase the numbers of engaged and educated voters in Oregon. All right. On to engagement, my second E. Two points I'd like to make here. One has to do with technology, and the other has to do with vision. First, technology. I think it's fair to say that in this country, we are stuck in the 19th century in terms of technology and how it relates to elections. From how we vote, to even waiting in lines, and I know some of you are frowning, you don't have to wait in line in Oregon, but yes, in some places you do have to wait in line, especially if you wait till the last day to go cast your ballot on a presidential election. We at the Secretary of State's office have begun to use technology to engage two distinct groups of Oregonians that have typically been disenfranchised: voters with disabilities and our military and overseas voters. So let me share what we're doing. When I came on board, we were using very outdated technology to enable voters with disabilities to vote on accessible computer stations. In addition to being very expensive, they frankly weren't very accessible. So one of my staffers about 2 years ago had a brilliant idea. Let's use iPads to mark ballots. We tested it, we piloted, and became the first jurisdiction we know in the United States, but we actually believe the first jurisdiction in the world to use this tablet technology to enable voters with disabilities to mark their ballots. The best part is that the underlying software, and I don't want to get too techno-geek on you, is that the underlying software enables us to deliver our ballots to military and overseas voters via PDF. The military and overseas voters can return the ballot via regular mail, or if they want to, they can choose to scan it and email it back electronically. So we actually used this tool in the fall of 2012. You might recall a hurricane by the name of Sandy came by the East Coast, and we had a few Oregonians that were stranded and actually wanted to cast their ballot. They called us. We were able to enable them to vote using this particular technology. So I think my sense is that this tablet technology is really the tip of the iceberg. One of the uses we've talked about putting them to use for is the tablet technology can read you your ballot. It can read you your ballot in English. I think we could also program them to read you your ballot in Spanish, in Cantonese, whatever in Russian, whatever language you wanted. And if it can read your ballot, what else can it read? What is the Bible that comes to you 2 weeks or 3 weeks before the election? Your voter's pamphlet. So we think this is the tip of the iceberg. We're very excited about our ability to use technology, not only to enable our voters with disabilities to vote in the convenience of their own homes, but also, very importantly, to allow our military and overseas voters to participate. I think when you have your lives on the lines overseas, the very least we can do is make it as easy and accessible to participate in the fundamental right of voting. And the good news is, last election cycle, 2012, we had the highest turnout of military and overseas voters that we'd ever seen before. So that's really great news. We know they're using it. So as I'm talking about engagement, the other word I want to share with you is vision. And so I'm going to share a little story with you. And it's the history of vote by mail. And I think we all think of Secretary Norma Paulus as being the mother of vote by mail. And if you can pardon the use of words, Secretary Kiesling, probably the father of vote by mail. But it was really a gentleman by the name of Del Reilly. Vote by mail was really his brainchild. They had an election in Linn County in the mid-70s. It was a bond measure, and it passed by 2 votes. The county clerk, Del Reilly at the time, learned that after the election, only 2 people had voted. So he became gravely concerned about what would happen, not only for school board elections, but for presidential elections, if people didn't show up. So he started searching for a solution, and he looked all over the United States. And he found a little city in the state south of Oregon. You might know it as California. The city was San Diego, and they were conducting elections by mail. So he talked to Secretary Paulus, and of course she was very concerned as well, very concerned about folks not coming out to vote. And so they took a delegation, a bipartisan delegation, to San Diego. They said, this looks pretty good. Let's give it a shot. So Secretary Paulus introduced legislation, I think it probably took her a couple of sessions, that passed, that enabled local and school board elections to be held by mail. And that's how we got the start of vote by mail in the state of Oregon. But Del Reilly's vision, his vision was that every Oregonian should be able to have a ballot in their hands. And vote by mail gets us there, sort of, but not quite. So, I think some of you are aware that we have a 20-day voter registration cutoff in the state of Oregon. In order to vote, you have to register, and you have to register 20 days before the election. I see this 20-day cutoff as a barrier to people participating. And what do I mean by that? The last 3 general election cycles, 40,000 Oregonians registered after that deadline. Guess what? That means they couldn't vote in that particular election. And in 2012 alone, 16,000 Oregonians missed the voter registration deadline. 16,000. Now just put that, I'm going to put that number in perspective for you. First of all, you might recall a U.S. Senate race where Al Franken beat Norm Coleman by about 330 votes. You also might recall a governor's race in the state of Washington a few years ago. A woman by the name of Christine Gregoire beat Dino Rossi to go on to become Washington governor. Do you remember what that vote total was? 133 votes. And for me, this is also very personal. When I ran for the House the very first time in a hotly contested Democratic primary, I beat my opponent by a mere 7 votes. So I'm a firm believer that we can use technology to implement Del Riley's vision of putting a ballot in the hands of every eligible Oregonian. So we have a proposal. We introduced it last session. We're going to be introducing it in the 2015 session to streamline and simplify Oregon's voter registration system. It would be very cost-effective, and it would enable virtually all Oregonians to have their voices be heard. I don't believe that registration was designed to be a barrier to people voting, and that is exactly what it has become. So, as I mentioned, we're going to submit this proposal again in the 2015 legislative session, and I look forward to getting your support on it. So, these are the reforms we are proposing to educate and engage all eligible Oregonians. Now, let me talk just briefly about my last one, and I'm just going to call it empowerment. What I'm speaking about right now is campaign finance reform. Good, I got somebody happy in the audience. Couple people happy in the audience. As you all know, Oregon has one of the most transparent campaign finance reporting systems in the country. It was the result of bipartisan legislation that passed in 2005, and I know because I was there and part of that bipartisan work group. The legislation essentially requires contributions and expenditures to be reported online 30 days, every 30 days, so it's a rolling reporting date, up until 6 weeks prior to the election. Then it goes to a 7-day reporting time frame. But what it really does is allow all Oregonians to follow the money in politics. So one of the examples I can share with you is in 2008, when I was running to be your Secretary of State, my grandfather donated to my campaign. Because he lived, he's since passed away, he lived in the great state of Minnesota, he contributed online, but because he's an out-of-stater, it's highlighted in our transparent campaign finance reporting system. But you could, if you wanted to, go online and figure out how much my grandfather gave me in 2008. So it's a good system, but in my mind, it's not good enough for my Oregon. So I think there are a couple of reasons why we should work together to limit the amount of money spent on campaigns for the Oregon legislature and for statewide offices. First of all, Oregonians want it and have passed it twice, first with ballot measure 9 in 1994 and 72% of the vote. And Oregonians also said they wanted it when they passed ballot measure 47 in 2006, though the percentage was only 53% of the vote. Ballot measure 9 was overturned by your Oregon Supreme Court because contribution limits violate Oregon's free speech clause, violate the Oregon Constitution. So I know this is not an easy task because it will require an amendment to the Constitution, but I think it's an important one. Second, I would argue that the amount of money being spent gives the perception of corruption. Oregon spends per capita more money than just about any other state in the nation in legislative races. And just one example, in 2012, $23 million was spent on legislative races. That's according to Jeff Mapes of the Oregonian, so I'm assuming the Oregonian won't politifact it. So however you divide it out, it's a heck of a lot of money. Lastly, and importantly, we must ensure that our elected leadership in our statewide offices, both the legislature and statewide offices, reflects what I call the growing changes in the faces of Oregon. It's fundamentally not fair if only rich people can impact our elections. And frankly, if only wealthy people can run for office. I served as caucus leader for almost a decade, so I have a pretty good sense of this. But there's no doubt in my mind that the amount of money that it costs to run for office is a barrier for some, and it definitely limits the diversity of folks running for office. So I pose to you, if we want to make sure that what is happening at the national level does not happen here, I think it's incumbent upon all of us to find a solution to limit campaign contributions. So as I close my remarks to you today, I ask for your support to engage and educate and empower all Oregonians. Oregon's motto is, she flies with her own wings. Working together, I think we can keep it that way. Thank you very much.
And a personal thank you for me. I was one of those military voters.
Thank you.
Yay. Voted from overseas.
Thanks.
Our first questioner is Mark Frohnmeyer, a local businessman and proponent of a unified primary primary initiative, which he's hoping to have on the 2014 ballot, unless the legislature beats him to the punch. Secretary Brown and he have agreed that he'll have a little time to explain his proposal first before asking his first question.
Well, I just wanted to say, to start out, thank you again. Every one of my personal interactions, both actually on the business front that we were going to be talking about today and on the electoral side with the Secretary of State's office have been amazing. So, you run a tight ship, and I think your vision's totally in the right place.
Thank you.
And I'll start a little bit at the end, which was we were empower, engage, educate. Empower.
Good,
engage.
He was listening. Yay!
Or educate, engage, empower. In any case, on the topic of campaign finance reform, which I'll circle back to in the form of a question at the end, is how much leveling of that playing field can we do with technology? So in the realms of technology that I feel like Oregon is already breaking ground in, what more can we do? Not necessarily in terms of if we've got to overturn Citizens United, but is there a way to level the playing field on the state level? And then to the substance of the unified primary initiative, the question of voter engagement and voter empowerment is something that's of a particular passion of mine. I am a non-affiliated voter, so I don't affiliate with one of the two major parties, and the population in Oregon that makes up that section of voters has been on a steady increase. I think we're up to, I want to say around 31% of the electorate is not affiliated, and that amongst new voters, so the students that are registering in the high school, it's more like 45%. So new voters today are registering more as not affiliated than they are with either of the two major political parties. And that presents a really particular problem because the way that we choose candidates for public office at the state level, we actually have three different ways that we do it. One is the primary election, where candidates and voters in the two major parties participate in a state-funded election to select one candidate from each of the two major parties. Minor parties are nominated by conventions of those parties, and then non-affiliated candidates by petition to the general election ballot. But what that ends up doing is it ends up giving the two major party candidates an unassailable advantage in the race. And it means that effectively about a third of the population is totally shut out of that candidate selection process. So the goal of the unified primary initiative is to recast the primary from a partisan nominating contest into a unified process where all voters and all candidates participate. This might sound like something that came up in Oregon before called the open primary, and it shares some similarity. So in open primary, every candidate was on one ballot. All the voters, regardless of party, got to participate. The difference in unified primary is that unified primary is really a referendum on each candidate. So every voter gets a yes or no vote on every candidate on the ballot. It's a simple system. It's called approval voting. It's been around forever. It's the question becomes not which is your favorite, but which do you like? And then the two candidates that are approved by the most Oregonians would move on to the general election ballot for a nuanced choice between the two. The reason why that system is so important is that when we talk about giving every voter a voice, it's not just about giving every voter a voice, it's really about giving every voter an equal voice. And when you have an election where you can only make one choice, your voice, the strength of your voice, is inversely proportional to the number of candidates that you actually approve of. So if you like just one candidate in the race, well, then you've got maximum power. But if you like three, then you and everyone else who supports those three candidates have effectively one-third of a vote. So in a sense, the number of candidates in the race totally skews the individual voting voice of every voter in the population. What the unified primary will do is it will allow every voter to have an equal voice on every candidate, regardless of the number of candidates in the race, regardless of the political parties or affiliations or preferences of either the candidates or the voters. We're running this as an initiative petition right now. A senator from our area, Chris Edwards, has agreed to bring it into the legislative conversation in February for a referral to the ballot. And you know, whether it is put on the ballot by an initiative or put on the ballot by the legislature, ultimately it is really a question for the voters to answer about how do you want to vote. But at the very least, wanted to spark that conversation amongst the City Club. This is, of course, an initiative born here in Eugene, and as well for those who are interested to get engaged in the project. So I would certainly invite any feedback or comment. I know this is a fairly fresh concept, but any feedback on that, and then as well would love to get your thoughts on technology and campaign finance reform, because I think those two are very interlinked.
Great. Mark, I think what I would say is in terms of primary reform, I would agree with you that we need reforms to Oregon's primary system. One of the reforms that I've been talking to with minor parties is just what you mentioned, essentially, is right now, essentially, the Democrats and Republicans have government-funded primaries, and the minor parties go off and select their candidates through a caucus or through other means. I think it makes sense to allow minor parties of a certain size to all have access to the ballot in the primary in May. What I will say about the open primary and the reason I voted no on the last proposal that was in front of the voters a few years ago, there were two reasons. Number one, folks said it would be a way of drawing people to the polls, or in Oregon, to the ballot, right? We know that substantially more people vote in the general election. So, for example, in Oregon, our turnout in a general election, presidential, we get it up over 80%, 82% in 2012 amongst registered voters. In your primary election, your voter turnout is relatively small, in the neighborhood of 20 to 40%. So, from my perspective, I would prefer an open general election where all of the parties can have their candidates on the ballot versus an open primary, just because of the numbers of people that participate in the general election process. That being said, you know, I keep an open mind and love to hear more about your proposal. It includes some concepts of instant runoff voting, allowing folks to have, it's not quite instant runoff,
It has that flavor, it has the flavor of being able to choose both approval and preference, but it uses the same ballots we have now, so people don't have to get a different thing and they're not going to spoil their ballots and so on.
And the other interesting thing, and the open primary measures that folks said it would reduce the partisanship in the legislatures. And actually, I've been spending the last couple of days reviewing the literature that's out there. There's not a lot. Two states, pretty similar to Oregon, California and Washington, both have open primaries. I haven't seen any data from Washington State, but it's my sense that it has not decreased the partisanship, and frankly, there's a lot of rankling in the Washington legislature right now. In California, I think folks would say it has created a more moderate legislature, but Republicans have been virtually shut out of the California legislature. They're in very small numbers. That is not true in Oregon. So we have some different dynamics. So I think we need to look carefully at all proposals. I certainly support proposals that empower and engage all spectrums of the political system. And I certainly, having served in the legislature and both in a tied chamber and watched the tied House a few years ago, support efforts to bring legislators of all parties together to work to solve Oregon's problems. So that's how I would respond to that. I do hope you're using the internet to gather signatures once you're ready to do so.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
This is something that I actually...
I'd love it if we could have used the internet to gather signatures during the sponsorship phase.
Well, we'll maybe try and get there. This is one of the last couple of years we've passed legislation provide a higher degree of confidence for Oregonians that once initiatives get to the ballot, they do so through legal and legitimate means. But in that legislation, we allow folks to gather signatures essentially through the internet. Joe, I could send you a petition. You could print it off, sign it, and send it back to the Secretary of State's office. I will tell you that petitions that come in through that have used this, their validity rate, guess what, is very, very high. So I really encourage folks to use the internet enable people to directly make laws. The second question you had was about campaign finance and using technology to expand. I think there's one primary change that we need to make to our campaign finance system. And that is, I mentioned, for most of the election year, you have a 30-day reporting period. And then during the last few weeks, it moves to 7 days. I've had legislation in front of the Oregon legislature for the last couple of sessions to increase the reporting period during the last 3 weeks of the campaign or the last 2 weeks of the campaign when voters have their ballots in their hands. To me, that makes the most sense, that you would have a higher level of visibility and scrutiny during that period when people have their ballots. We're still working on moving forward on that legislation, but I think that's a way that technology can really help Oregonians follow the money in politics.
And I guess where I was really kind of leading with that initial question was, and thank you for your thoughts on the unified primary, and I really want to make sure we distinguish between the open primaries as existed in Washington and California versus what we're proposing here, because there is a pretty substantial difference.
I would agree.
But in terms of the technology question, you said we're using 19th century technology for voting. I guess I would argue we're using Benjamin Franklin technology for voting.
You're probably right.
With the notable exception of actually voting on an iPad in Oregon, so I think that is something we should definitely be amazingly proud of. But when I think about the voter's manual that comes, the Bible for voting, as you call it, it's dense, small text. I think of people who have challenges reading. I've unfortunately gotten to the point where I'm having a harder time focusing my eyes.
Aren't we all?
And it strikes me that all of that information, a big URL emblazoned on every ballot that says, go here, you can see, videos of candidates, some sort of a nonpartisan electronic town hall that lets, not necessarily, it won't cut out the benefit of money in a campaign, but it would potentially give candidates that are having, in that down position, a more level playing field that is, on the equivalent of a YouTube or a Facebook for elections or something like that.
Well, what I would say briefly is that we're ready to implement anything the legislature funds. So just to give you an example, your voter's pamphlet, and I use the Bible, I hope people understand the use of that term in that instance. Generally speaking, your voter's pamphlet is about 50% general fund and 50% candidate funded. So it's a pretty good deal for the candidate, and I would argue it's a pretty good deal for the voter as well. We send the voter's pamphlet out to every single household in the state of Oregon. Notice I didn't say every registered to vote household, every household. And we do that because it's substantially cheaper to do that. So that's why we do that. So we are interested in using technology to make, you know, voters' pamphlets, et cetera. We're meeting with Disability Rights Oregon to talk about. They do a voters' pamphlet for us as well. We are interested in using technology, whether we use the internet, et cetera, to make sure that folks have more information about what is on the ballot and who is on the ballot.
Excellent.
Now, should I kick him off and let someone else ask a question?
I'm monopolizing my floor. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Mark Fronmeyer, for as our first questioner. Now it's time to take our break and compose your questions at the table. We'll take 5 minutes or so, and then we'll have your questions for Secretary Brown.
You're tuned to KLCC Eugene 89.7 FM, KLCO Newport 90.5, 89.1 KLFR Reedsport, and at 88.1 KLFO Florence, KMPQ Roseburg, and KLBR Bend. We're also on the web at klcc.org.
And we're back at City Club with Oregon Secretary of State Kate Brown and your questions.
Well, number one, I want to say thank you for coming here and choosing this topic, because I know that a lot of us are interested, and it's great that Mark's proposal is right here from Eugene that we're all excited about. My question is regarding our existing technology, and I'm wondering why we don't use the existing technology that we have to create a simple database that allows people to enter their address and see all of their representatives from the hyperlocal level, which would be school and utility boards, all the way up to the federal. And also mandate that every publicly elected office have its rules to file for candidacy available online.
Great. Sounds like a great idea. Look forward to working with you to implement it. I absolutely agree with you. I think we need to increase the ownership that Oregonians feel over their political process. And I think that it means engaging Oregonians of all ages, frankly, and at all levels of government. And I think technology and tools like that can increase accessibility and visibility and hopefully increase the diversity of elected leadership in the state.
So is your office working on creating this database to do this?
Well, I look forward to working with you so we can do that. So yes. I mean, we certainly have to take a look at expenditures and how we can afford to do this. And we've got a number of projects regarding technology already happening in our elections system. But this is really exciting, and I look forward to figuring out a way to make this happen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And my thanks, Secretary Brown, for being with us today. Mine is more a question for further information. I'm curious how widespread vote by mail is beyond San Diego and Oregon.
Okay. Well, I always get that question, and I love that question. And I actually don't even know if the city of San Diego is doing vote by mail now. But I do know the state of Oregon was the first state in the nation to have all vote by mail. Washington State followed us recently. They are an entirely vote by mail state. And the trivia question of the day is, what is the third state in the nation to be all vote by mail? The answer, Colorado. Governor John Hickenlooper just signed into law this past summer a bill requiring that all registered Coloradans receive a ballot in the mail. The legislation went a little bit further. It also enables Coloradans to, enables Coloradans to register to vote even on election day. And it requires that the Secretary of State set up election booths, voting booths, centers around the state so that voters who do not want to vote by mail can choose to go into a polling place. So it's probably the most progressive voting access legislation that we've seen in this country. So very interesting things happening. We do have a number of voters around the country voting by mail. I would say that much like our women's suffrage movement, which was a west to east movement, Oregon being the seventh state to grant women the right to vote after all our neighboring sisters did, vote by mail is very much, I think, a west to east movement as well. And we see in primaries, Arizona, California, a number of states where many of those voters are choosing to vote by mail. The barrier in many states across the country is that many states require some type of an excuse for people to vote by mail, to vote absentee, essentially. And that excuse may include a doctor's note or something like that. So that's really the barrier, I think, to more Americans voting by mail. Thank you.
I'm Mary Layton. I've been a City Club member since 2006, and our table was concerned about the issue of civics. I taught for a long time in Maryland. In order to get a high school diploma, you had to pass a basic civics test. You also had to pass algebra, but for my money, civics would be much more important. And even though I'm a career educator, I would happily endorse a civics test as a requirement for high school graduation. Is there any action on this front?
Mary, as your chief elections officer, I also would endorse that test. But I do think that the schools would riot if we imposed one more testing requirement on students in the state. I think we're going to have to do work with volunteers, expand programs like the Classroom Law Project to get into the schools. I think there's some really interesting things happening to enable students to integrate what they're learning in the classroom with what's happening in their communities.
And we need to be very scared about choosing a system that thinks it's more important to learn algebra than to learn how to function in a democracy. So I am opposed to lots of the testing stuff and lots of the required curriculum, but civics should not have been turned aside for this purpose.
I totally agree with you, and I think the audience does too, and I think that was one of the reasons, right, of a public education system was to produce good citizens. So next question.
Jovan Hipple, City Club member. Our table had realized that campaign finance reform does not depend on the legislature because the legislature changes from time to time. So what we really need to do is to have a constitutional amendment for campaign finance reform. How do we do that?
That is a great question, Joe, and I'm glad you raised that issue. The answer is yes. As I mentioned in my remarks, in order for Oregon to implement any type of campaign finance limits, we need a constitutional amendment. Our focus has been around Article 1, Section 8, the free speech clause, and from my perspective, both as a lawyer, a recovering legislator, I've been very reluctant to amend the free speech clause. But there is another article out there relating to elections. I believe it's Article 2, Section 8. I think that is what the constitutional amendment should revolve around. I believe Senator Przanski in the last legislative session introduced a constitutional amendment on that particular issue. And it didn't move forward, but I am hoping that we can encourage the legislature to move forward on this issue in future sessions, or if not, somebody like your chief elections officer, Kate Brown, needs to take it to the ballot. So we'll see what we can do. Take it to the people, get the signatures, and then put it on the ballot. So it's a lot of work. What? Right. Well, no, I don't write the ballots. No, your attorney general writes the ballot titles, and I'm very grateful that that's how that worked out. So. Good afternoon.
Hi. Duncan Rhodes, City Club member for a year or so. I'd like to know what can be done on reform of gerrymandering. Recently, Lane County gerrymandered the electoral districts to guarantee, or pretty much guarantee, three Republican commissioners and one Democratic commissioner in a county that's majority Democratic. Is there anything we can do to elect more centrist representatives rather than extremists?
Well, I think Mark Frommeyer would say help him with his measure. I think gerrymandering is seen as an issue not only locally but nationally. And what gerrymandering is essentially politicians drawing lines, legislative or congressional or local elected official lines in a way that benefits themselves and keeps them in office. You should be really proud, frankly, of your Oregon legislature. And we are required to do redistricting in this state every 10 years. And in the 2011 legislative session, we had a bipartisan team of Republicans and Democrats that came together that drew the legislative and the congressional redistricting plan. There was no legal challenges from that. And that was basically the first time since I was born, and that was a long time ago. So you should be really proud of your legislature working across party lines to draw lines. I think that should be happening everywhere, in essence. But happy to talk with you further about it after the program.
Hi, I'm Joel Corin, City Club member for 2 years. You mentioned that some folks with disabilities now can use the iPad to vote. Are there any plans to allow wider use of the iPad, say, for everybody?
Actually, thank you. That's a great question. And I should probably clarify the tablet, we're using both iPad and Microsoft technology, their tablets, Microsoft Surface Pro, to mark ballots. But I anticipate the tablet technology will be used even further. So we have a number of people voting in this state whose first language is not English. Sometimes it's easier for them to read or hear stuff in their first language. So that is one of the things that we're talking with. The legislature passed a task force bill last session, and we're getting that up and going to work on how we can enfranchise folks using technology, frankly.
What about universal?
Oh, universal, everyone.
Right.
I think, honestly, I have to tell you, Colorado's now the model, and I think we're going to be moving to using technology to deliver ballots in a variety of ways. And if you had asked me this question 4 years ago, I would have told you, we're not ready. I would have said something else. We're not ready. The security's not there yet. But I think in about 4 to 8 years, we can probably deliver your ballots to you via PDF. You can print it off, send it back in. You could scan it back in. There's a whole lot of technologies that I think we're going to be using. I want voting to be as accessible as possible for every eligible Oregonian. And for me, that's implementing Del Riley's vision, putting a ballot in your hands, and it may be some type of electronic transmittal of that ballot. I'm not quite ready to get rid of the paper trail.
Thank you.
Thank you. Great question. Sorry, I lost it in my first answer.
Brianna. My name is Brianna Galallo. I'm a 3 p.m. student at the University of Oregon. And my question actually pertains to the Bible. And so 46% of the population is using smartphones, with that number projected to increase rather quickly. So my question for you is actually, with the Bible, do you have any plans to condense it to an app, use more infographics, and make it a bit more visual, especially for people of my generation?
You're talking voter's pamphlet, right?
Yes, I am.
Yes, okay.
I apologize.
Wait
no.
a minute, wait a minute. I think generally, yes. I try and hire a number of young people on my staff. I went to law school at the other law school in Portland, and graduated in 1985. There was one person, she was a year behind me in law school, that had a portable computer, and it was the size of a suitcase, and I can even remember her name. I think things are changing rapidly, and particularly how the millennial generation accesses information is changing extremely rapidly. And I think you all, my staff included, will be demanding that we use technology to make voting so accessible, and that includes voters' pamphlet, that includes everything. I mentioned in my remarks that the voting technology is in the 19th century. Mark said it's probably the Ben Franklin century. Yes, that is so much the case. That is because I believe, not only in this state but across this country, we have not chosen to prioritize funding for elections. Funding this very fundamental right and voice that we have in our democracy. And so people's right to vote, as you know, is being challenged everywhere across the United States from all sorts of things that are happening. I think we should be moving in the other direction, and I actually want to hear from you about tools that you need that would be more useful. So kate.brown@state.or.us. I do respond. Sometimes it takes a little while. So thank
I'll
you.
I'll certainly email you then. Thank
Good
you.
Luck in school.
Thanks for being here, Secretary Edward McLone. And tying to more tools for voters, can you kind of give a progress report on same-day voter registration and next steps for getting it passed?
Sure. I'm glad you asked that question. So as I mentioned in my remarks, Oregon has the 20-day cutoff prior to the election for our voter registration. Some of you might recall that is in our Constitution as well. So it would require a vote of the people for that to change. My sense is that Oregonians are not very excited about changing that date, that time frame. We've looked at, could we just move it up to 7 days before the election? I would say, generally speaking, voters are more receptive to that. My goal, frankly, has really been to use technology to engage voters through our voter registration simplification legislation that we had, because I think that changing that cutoff date in our Constitution is a is about as tough a row to hoe as the campaign finance limits one. So I want to use technology to engage and register folks that way. Thank you.
Dan Bryant, City Club member since 1996. So I want, long time. I want to explore the technology and the security issue, because I just remember a whole lot of concern a few years back when there was discussion of moving away from paper-based ballots, of not trusting corporations who were creating the voting machines, right? Remember all that?
Yes.
And now we just see, 100 million folks who lost their credit card information through Target, from hacking. So can you speak to a little bit about how do we protect the security of the system when we use all this wonderful technology that I very much support, but how do we do both?
Thank you, and it's good to see you, and thanks for all your great work in the community. So I'll just talk about security and what we're doing generally to protect the integrity of the ballot. So first of all, when you get your ballot, there's a barcode on it. You might mention it. We use that to track your ballot. And you also sign your ballot before you send it in. We check every single signature on every single ballot. And we check it with the Centralized Voter Registration Database. So if your signature doesn't match, you get a call from your county clerk, Cheryl Betchart, to say, come in and verify that you are who you say you are. So that's why, for right now, paper is so important, because we use the signature verification method. Well, I talked about our military and overseas voters. How do we do that? Barcode again, and signature as well. So when Marty sent his ballot in, I'm not going to ask him how he sent it in, but let's say he decided he wanted to have it electronically scanned. He would have to sign a release so that the county clerk knew his ballot was coming in and that it belonged to him, but he'd also have a signature on it. And we use the barcode as well. So there are a number, that's just one, one system, but there are a number of guarantees in the system to verify the integrity of the ballot. That's why one of the reasons why I've supported vote by mail and been concerned about moving to electronic voting, whether it's DREs and other mechanical types you've seen in other states, is because we have a paper trail. And when there is a question about an election, or when the numbers are very close, we can do a recount. And people can observe that recount. It's a very transparent process. That's not true in other states where they use electronic voting machines. So I anticipate, as we move towards more technological methods of voting, you will have multiple ways to track a particular ballot, whether it's electronically or a paper trail. So those are a couple of methods. I'll just generally, in terms of the security of the ballot, if you go into your county clerk's office, you might see cameras in the rooms where they're processing ballots. That's been a new security tool that we have used in the last couple of years. We are also enhancing the security, shall we say, of the elections board members that come in to help process the ballots to really ensure the integrity of the ballot. One of the questions I get a lot is, what about folks who are voting fraudulently? Well, I will tell you, as your chief elections officer, it is one of my most important jobs to ensure the integrity of the ballot. So we take cases of fraud very seriously. And if you are concerned about voter fraud, you should call us. We investigate and then turn it over to the Department of Justice for prosecution. I will tell you, we've got a couple of those in the pipeline right now, and you'll be hearing more about them. But we take these cases extremely serious. Voter fraud is a Class C penalty, subject to 5 years in prison, and it's a $125,000 fine. Yes. On that happy note.
John Dolo, City Club, and touching on the civics thing, I was really shocked to hear that, 43% don't know that we have two senators? When I was in sixth grade, we had at least a half a session of just civics, of government, and that kind of thing is just, how do we educate? Maybe I should question something that you may not know that much about. Do they still teach government and civics in grade school?
I think there is some. I don't think it's as extensive as what it was when you and I grew up.
No.
That's why I think it's, and as you know, I mean, education, we've had mandates over the, you know, the last whatever, we've had No Child Left Behind, and now we have the Common Core. Teachers are really focused on, I think they would say, teaching to the test. Is that fair, Mary?
Yeah.
And so educators feel a lot of pressure to make sure that their students could pass the tests. And, I think in terms of civics, we all as citizens need to get involved with our schools, whether we volunteer with Classroom Law Project or other citizen-type engagement, because I don't think we can have our schools do all of it. And I think that's where we come, where the Eugene City Club could truly make a difference by encouraging its members to get involved and volunteer at your local schools, get your students involved, all that good stuff.
Is there any pressure you can put on the school board to teach this stuff?
That's actually a good question, John. And the reason why I said privatize Classroom Law Project, fund something that we know works. It's evidence-based. Marilyn and Barb probably are going crazy if they heard me say this, but we know it works. It's evidence-based practices. I think it's really a challenge to add, you know, more into schools than's already happening right now. I sat on the Board of Higher Education as an ex officio member for 3 years, 4 years. Josh attended with me as well. We really struggled to ensure that civics played a greater role in our education system than it is currently playing. And I think one of the challenges, right, is that we're all getting information, and this is true with students and young people, all from different sources. It used to be that we all got it from the same source, Eugene Register Guard, or public radio, or whatever. So this is going to get more challenging, and that's why it's really incumbent on each and every one of us to get up and volunteer and take your kid to the legislature day.
Marty Wilde, City Club President. An aside here, having deployed twice with NATO with a bunch of Europeans, it never surprised me that they could explain their civic system in their countries to me, but it surprised me how much I learned from them about our system. But my question is actually just a quick question on another topic. I mean, when we were having the debate in this country before Citizens United about whether campaign donations equaled speech or not, the other side, I shall say, the side that prevailed in Citizens United said, well, you can't have limits, but transparency is really the cure for that. And they've changed their tune a little, and now they don't want as much transparency. But we took them at their word before that. And so now the question I have is, do we need to take that a step farther and perhaps publish the numbers and demographics of donors perhaps in the voters' pamphlet when it comes out, so people can see not just what they're voting for? Because candidates often, while you can go out and find the information, they aren't interested in publicizing it. And furthermore, they're not answering questionnaires from Project Vote Smart or the other ones to actually tell us what their positions are. So, your money is where your heart is what somebody said once.
I think, Marty, the legislature has looked at legislation to include, for example, the top five donors in the voters' pamphlet. One, it's partly a timing issue, and I believe there's some free speech issues as well. I have to tell you that if we can increase transparency during the last couple of weeks when people have the voters in the ballots in their hands, I think that is the best approach because it is the most, it's the most accurate and timely. But it's kind of like, sure, whatever, whatever the legislature wants us to do, we'll implement. I'm certainly open to other suggestions. I think the dynamic for Oregon is that we were transparent before it was okay, we were at the cutting edge of transparency, and really struggled around contribution limits. And now, you know, in a number, you know, there's just across the nation and what's happening at the federal level, the focus is on transparency, and I'm sitting here talking about contribution limits. So I feel like we're going against the tide on this one. I think more transparency is better. I know in Washington State the TV ads they do, you know, require the top three donors at the time. I think we were unable, my recollection is I think we were unable to do that particular legislation in Oregon because of our free speech clause. So, but I'll check and make sure and get back to you on that. So.
Well, thank you very much, Oregon Secretary of State Kate Brown.
Thank you. Thank you. Holy smokes.
Thank you for bringing clarity and vision to this City Club program on electoral reform in Oregon. And thanks again to our sponsors, Evans, Elder & Brown, Helios Resource Network, PacInfo Internet Solutions. And we meet again in just 2 days on Friday, on January 17th, at the Downtown Athletic Club for our next program, The Beating Heart of the City, What to Do About Kesey Square, a brainstorming session about how to address that situation.
Okay.
Lunches for this program can be ordered on the website or contact the office, or you can order there, but you might have to wait a little bit to get it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You've got a great voice for radio.